Today is Monday, December 27th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. COVID cases are surging around the world, but people are still traveling.
I came here for a funeral, and because of the importance of the person it was, that's why I decided to travel.
Political leaders in Somalia are bickering over when to hold elections in the Horn of Africa country after the vote was already delayed.
The Somali citizens are losing confidence in their leadership over continued election wrangles. The international community is also frustrated with the lack of commitment by the leaders.
And people around the world are remembering Nobel Peace Laureate Archbishop Desmond Tutu, who died on Sunday. We'll have these stories and more next. Surging coronavirus cases around the world are threatening healthcare systems in countries seeing a significant spread. The newest variant, Omicron, led to thousands of flight cancellations ahead of the Christmas holiday. U.S. President Joe Biden last week announced plans to send 1,000 service members to support U.S. hospital workers and plans to stockpile masks and gowns.
After airlines say they grounded thousands of flights leading up to Christmas, with reports of pilots and staff falling ill amid the surging Omicron variant of the coronavirus. But at some airports, like the one in Newark, New Jersey, it's business as usual.
I came here for a funeral, and because of the importance of the person it was, that's why I decided to travel. But I do know the risk that I'm taking, you know, flying and whatnot. But, you know, sometimes it's not about you, it's about certain things that are more important to you in life. So that's why I decided to travel, essentially. But I am aware of the risk that I'm taking by traveling during this time of year.
Health experts warn that anyone in an airport will likely come in contact with the Omicron variant. But recent reports from South Africa and England point to promising data showing surging Omicron infections as being less likely to lead to hospitalization or severe illness. Sunday on ABC's This Week, President Biden's chief medical advisor, Dr. Anthony Fauci, said that does not signal the all clear.
When you have such a high volume of new infections, it might override a real diminution in severity, so that if you have many, many, many more people with a less level of severity, that might kind of neutralize the positive effect.
Fauci praised the president's multifaceted plan to have military personnel in support roles at U.S. hospitals to help deal with surging cases, along with ramped up testing and stockpiling personal protective equipment. Still, he says, vaccination remains the single best way to prevent disease.
We're particularly worried about those who are in that unvaccinated class, that, you know, tens and tens of millions of Americans who are eligible for vaccination who have not been vaccinated. Those are the most vulnerable ones when you have a virus that is extraordinarily effective in getting to people and infecting them the way Omicron is.
Despite the looming threat of Omicron and all the canceled flights, the Ronald Reagan Washington National Airport was packed with holiday travelers last Friday, Christmas Eve.
Great, except for waiting for your bags a little longer than usual. But other than that, the flight was great, on time, so pretty good.
It was a little stressful, but we made it. We're here.
We had the first flight out this morning, so we thought we'd be okay. Worked out well.
Omicron now accounts for nearly three-quarters of all U.S. cases. According to news reports, the average number of new infections is about 165,000 per day. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
Newly infected COVID-19 patients have two new treatment options that can be taken at home, one from Pfizer and one from Merck. AP correspondent Ben Thomas has this report.
Both were shown to reduce the chances of hospitalization or death from COVID-19, but the pills have to be taken as soon as possible once symptoms appear, within 5 days of the start of those symptoms. That, of course, presents a challenge to get tested, a prescription, and start the treatment. The pills are intended for those with mild or moderate COVID-19, but who are more likely to become seriously ill. That includes older people and those with other health conditions like heart disease, cancer, or diabetes that make them more vulnerable. The antiviral pills are not authorized for people hospitalized with COVID-19. I'm Ben Thomas.
In Australia, 400 patients were mistakenly told they tested negative for COVID-19 when they were in fact positive. SIDPATH medical director Anthony Dodds says the pathology service at Sydney's St. Vincent's Hospital incorrectly told the patients they were negative.
An emergency response team is now investigating the cause of this mistake, which is believed to be due to human error. We sincerely apologize for the mistake that has been made.
That was Anthony Dodds, the SIDPath medical director in Sydney, Australia. Israel has begun trials of a fourth dose of coronavirus vaccine in what is believed to be the first study of its kind. The trial began at Sheba Medical Center outside of Tel Aviv. 150 medical staff who received a booster shot in August are getting a fourth dose of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine. Medical workers receiving the additional dose were tested and found to have low antibody levels. The trial comes as Israeli officials have considered introducing a second round of booster shots to its population as the country copes with rising infections with the new Omicron variant. Archbishop Desmond Tutu, an uncompromising foe of apartheid and a modern-day activist for racial justice, died Sunday at age 90. AP correspondent Julie Walker reports.
He's being remembered outside his Soweto home where flowers are being left. Anglican Bishop Stephen Murillo.
His legacy will be his love for all people.
Tutu was also remembered in Cape Town, which is where he died at a care center, by Government Minister Patricia de Lille.
He had an extraordinary ability to diffuse tension, contain anger.
The former president of Ireland, Mary Robinson, says Tutu's legacy is his work for peace, justice, and human rights.
His fight against apartheid, and he was very courageous in that, going on then to support all the kind of lost causes around the world.
I'm Julie Walker.
In the 1980s, when most anti-apartheid leaders were in jail, Archbishop Tutu became the face of the anti-apartheid movement abroad, becoming the voice of millions of South Africans suffering under white minority rule. In the post-apartheid government, Tutu chaired the Truth and Reconciliation Commission with the goal of exposing the evils committed under the apartheid system. Dr. Mamphela Ramphela is the acting chairperson of the Archbishop Desmond Tutu IP Trust and coordinator of the Office of the Archbishop and founder of the Open Society Foundation in the 70s, and Mouvengane, the humble beginnings of his life and what inspired his work.
They were staying in a garage with a bucket toilet. And so those things, he would never complain about things that affected him, but he would speak to the humiliation, the indignity of it all. And so he is a man who was called to the priesthood because he's a deeply spiritual person, but was called to be a prophet for social justice. And he never stopped, but he became even more public in his engagement with activism when he was the SACC Secretary General. That was at the height of the apartheid brutality. And he made sure that no way would people believe that the church that he led through the SACC would be silent when God's people were being humiliated.
And how did his activism affect his work as a cleric?
It enhanced his work as a cleric. He got, when I first met him, we were young activists of the Black Consciousness Movement, and he came to visit us in King Williamstown, where we had our first big community project, and I was the medical officer in charge of Zanempilo Community Health Center. Because he wasn't au fait with what we were talking about the need for liberation from mental slavery. Mm. And when we talked through that, he could see it immediately. So he was a great supporter of this healing of the humiliation of the past, the assertion of one's dignity because you are God's creature, but also the ungodliness of discrimination in whatever form, right, whether it was on the basis of racism, sexism, or homophobia, or xenophobia, all wrong. And so he had this coherence of values that exemplified what Ubuntu is about. And he understood it and lived it in every way he expressed himself.
What was his view of the world in his later years, especially in the last 4 years, as some of the injustices that he fought against today? Did he still maintain that hope for a world free of injustice, oppression, and exploitation?
Absolutely, because he said publicly several times he's a prisoner of hope. The fact that people are failing to rise to their responsibilities as leaders, whether it's in the public sector, in the private sector, or in people's personal lives, doesn't stop him from not just hoping, but championing the need for people to stand up and be the best version that God created them to become. And so it is that passion that drove him, and of course his courage. I mean, he was a very small man, but as his wife said, he had a heart of a lion. When there was injustice, as he did during the 80s when people were necklaced, he didn't care who was committing the atrocity. He would just tear into the crowd and pull out the victim. I mean, that was something very few people could have even contemplated, let alone done.
Dr. Mampela, as we end our conversation today, I just want to ask you, what is the legacy? What would you say is the legacy of Dr. Tutu? How will history remember him?
History will remember him as a man who recognized that unless human beings come to grips with what it means to be human and understand that to be human is to be connected to other human beings and to the rest of God's creation and live every day to be a strong contributor to that creation, you will have missed your vocation in life. So we as the IP Trust and the Desmond and Leah Tutu Foundation are working furiously to make sure that we capture and we document and we preserve and we make accessible to the world this man's incredible legacy in whatever way we can.
That was Dr. Mampela Ramphele, acting chairperson of the Archbishop Desmond Tutu IP Trust and co-coordinator of the Office of the Archbishop, speaking to VOA's Jackson Muvunganye on Sunday. You're listening to VOA News.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll explore the history and experiences of the African diaspora and how their connection to the continent has changed over generations. We'll also profile young Americans of African descent making their mark in U.S. politics. Join me, Haiti Adams, for the next Straight Talk Africa, this Wednesday at 18:30 UTC.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Carol Van Dam. Bickering Somali leaders have once again disagreed on already delayed elections in the Horn of Africa country, paving the way for another political crisis as the international community calls for dialogue to speed up the electoral process. Mohamed Kahiye reports from the capital city, Mogadishu.
Somali President Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed, popularly known as Farmajo, and his Prime Minister Mohamed Hussein Roble have argued again over the process, which is already behind the schedule. The head of state blamed the Prime Minister for failing to uphold a mandate to lead the country through elections, based on what has to come to be known as the September 17 Agreement of 2020. The agreement will allow 101 delegates to select the members of parliament who will choose the next head of state. In response, the Prime Minister rejected the call and maintained his commitment to lead a free and fair election process. Roble added that Farmajo's criticism is aimed at disrupting the ongoing process. The members of the opposition were quick to throw their weight behind the Prime Minister, who was tasked with conducting the elections following a political agreement on governing the process back in May. Former President Hassan Sheikh Mahmoud, who is among key candidates challenging the incumbent, reiterated the significance of expediting the electoral process to avoid setbacks.
He said, We don't have other options than that of the Prime Minister in convening the National Consultative Forum to discuss the challenges on the disagreed poll process, which we have been stressing from day one. Somali security agencies, backed by the African Union peacekeepers, have beefed up the security during the electoral process, but the experts warn that the continued spat involving the country's leadership is concerning. Dahir Koro is a political analyst who believes there is a need for quick steps forward.
The Somali citizens are losing confidence in their leadership over continued election wrangles. The international community is also frustrated with the lack of commitment by the leaders. On the other hand, the threats by Al-Shabaab is growing. Therefore, there's need for compromise in order to conduct credible polls.
This latest political crisis linked to elections comes as hundreds of Somalis affected by the severe drought wait for humanitarian assistance. Drought and famine in Somalia have been attributed to climate change. Mohamed Kahir for VOA News in Mogadishu, Somalia.
On Monday, the president of Somalia suspended the prime minister over alleged corruption in the latest fight over who will lead the country and the nation's delayed elections. Critics of the president, Mohamed Abdullah Mohamed, also known as Farmajo, says he's looking to stay in power by any means necessary. In a press briefing, the embattled prime minister, Mohamed Hussein Robel, said he will carry on his constitutional mandate to conduct the elections. Afghanistan's ruling Taliban issued a statement on Sunday saying new travel restrictions are in place for the country's women, an action criticized by the U.S. as further mistreatment of Afghan women. The Ministry for the Promotion of Virtue and Prevention of Vice Directive limits a woman's ability to travel farther than 72 kilometers unless accompanied by a close male relative. It also advised taxi drivers to offer rides only to women wearing an Islamic hijab or a headscarf. About 20 members of Afghanistan Women's Political Participation Network protested in a closed area in Kabul on Sunday, asking the country's new Taliban leadership for work, education, and political participation. Protesters chanted slogans like elimination of the women, elimination of human beings. Taliban leaders have tried to project a more moderate image in recent months and have said women and girls would be able to go to school and work in accordance with Islamic law. Many Afghans say schooling for girls is erratic at best. Iraq's top court on Monday ratified the results of the country's October parliamentary election. The court earlier in the day rejected an appeal that Iran-backed factions filed contesting the results. The development marks another boost for an influential Shiite cleric who had been confirmed the winner of Iraq's election. The appeal was submitted by the head of a pro-Iran coalition that lost seats in the October vote. The country's electoral commission said Shiite Muqtada al-Sadr secured 73 out of parliament's 329 seats in the country. China is using the Winter Olympic Games to drive its efforts to improve the environment, but smog-prone capital Beijing is still preparing for the worst as the opening ceremony looms. Dhruv Taikar reports for Reuters.
China is preparing to hold what it says will be the first ever carbon-neutral Winter Olympic Games in February, but concerns over air quality loom over the host city, Beijing. Authorities have warned that winter smog risks there remained severe. All 26 Olympic venues are spread out between the capital city and the surrounding Hebei province, collectively a region dominated by heavy industry. Hebei has vowed to, quote, transform and upgrade that economy. Since being chosen as the host back in 2015, China has planted thousands of hectares of trees in Beijing and Hebei province, built sprawling wind and solar farms, and relocated hundreds of enterprises. During a government-organized tour this week, officials said that all venues would be fully powered by renewable energy. Authorities denied, however, rumors that heavy polluting industries in the area would be shuttered ahead of the games. Environmental group Greenpeace has said that without more data, it would be hard to evaluate whether China can meet its carbon-neutral goal.
That was Reuters reporter Dhruv Taikar reporting. This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute. When you think of what bees eat, you probably picture them buzzing from one flower to another, gathering nectar and pollen to bring back to their hives. But several species of stingless bees supplement their diets with carrion or the flesh of dead animals. Scientists have found that one family of bees called Trigona or vulture bees has evolved to completely shun plant life and use only carrion for its food. Researchers from three U.S. universities have found the microbiome, a collection of microorganisms in the guts of most bees, has remained constant for 80 million years. According to a University of California Riverside press release, the scientists found that the microbiome in the Trigona bees was different and also had acid-loving bacteria like those found in other carrion eaters, something that their vegetarian cousins don't have. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Wanda Young, a member of Motown's The Marvelettes, has died at the age of 78. Oscar Wells Gabriel has this remembrance of Young and the popular 1960s doo-wop group.
With all the many stars produced by Motown, it was the Marvelettes who are credited with scoring the label's first number one hit. It was Please Mr. Postman, and one of the original members of that group has died. Wanda Young's death is confirmed by her daughter, who reported the news to the New York Times. She died December 15th in Michigan at the age of 87. The Marvelettes' 1961 hit was followed by many others like My Baby Must Be a Magician, The Hunter Gets Captured by the Game, and Don't Mess with Bill, on which Young sang lead. I'm Oscar Wells Gabriel.
Poland's president says he has decided to veto a media bill that would have forced the American company Discovery to give up its controlling share of Polish television network TVN. President Andrzej Duda pointed out on Monday that the bill was unpopular with many Poles and would have rolled back Poland's reputation as a place to do business. Many Poles saw the bill as an attempt to silence a broadcaster that airs independent and often critical reporting of the authorities. The bill was pushed by the ruling Law and Justice Party that Duda is aligned with. Mass protests across the country were recently held in support of the station and of freedom of speech more broadly. British police say they are investigating a video linked to a man armed with a crossbow who was arrested at Windsor Castle on Christmas Day. The video, obtained by the Sun newspaper, showed a masked person in a dark hoodie holding a crossbow and addressing the camera with a distorted voice, saying they wanted to, quote, assassinate Queen Elizabeth II, end quote. The Sun said the video was sent from the suspect's Snapchat account shortly before he was arrested. Police arrested a 19-year-old man within the grounds of Windsor Castle after a security breach occurred on Christmas morning. Officers found a crossbow after searching the man. Police said the suspect is in custody under the Mental Health Act. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington.
Love music from Africa and the world? VOA has the latest hits, interviews with the artists, and we are glad to take your requests. The Voice of America has what you're looking for. We have music shows to please everyone. Join us on the radio or on the internet to listen day or night. Go to voanews.com and voaafrica.com and click on your favorite program. Just follow your ears. Music from Africa and the world.